Welcome back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today, we're catching up with Josh Perry, who holds the overall self-supported FKT on the Pacific Crest Trail. Join us to learn about what it's like to hike 2,600 miles in 55 days and take 10 days off the previous men's self-supported record. So Josh, the PCT self-supported record was not your first FKT. You have FKTs on the Arizona Trail and the Long Trail. But I'm kind of curious what drew you to such a huge FKT after primarily doing shorter records.
It's funny saying this to you, of all people. Your 2013, your PCT FKT was what introduced me to the outdoors. It was the first time I heard about through hiking. I started running after reading your Barclay report. So I was like, from the word go, my introduction to through hiking was the only thing I knew was how like you hiked. And then later it was John Zahorian and Andrew Skirka. So I was introduced to this whole world through people who hiked big miles, and it was kind of always been on my mind.
Would you say that the shorter FKTs that you've done were like stepping stones toward this larger goal, like from the very beginning?
Yeah. So the Long Trail FKT was off the back of a 12-month long IT band problem. I hadn't hiked for about 2 years, and it was just a question of case of see if I can still, you know, do the miles I did on the CDT 2 years prior. And then the plan was always to go and do the PCT like a month after that. And then I quit the PCT in 2019, about 1,000 miles into my southbound hike. And I still had a bunch of food boxes prepped, so kept hiking all summer. And then when the Hey Duke connected with the Arizona Trail, it seemed like the logical step was to end my year with the ACT record attempt.
I definitely think that it's a certain type of person that considers things like that logical. So I'm kind of curious, what did you learn on these other FKTs and your other hiking and running that helped you when you got out onto the Pacific Crest Trail this year?
The Arizona Trail taught me that ibuprofen is not your friend, and it kind of gave me a better idea of how to manage things as they go wrong, because a lot went wrong on that hike for me. Whereas on the PCT, things kind of kept going smoothly until all of a sudden I was just collapsing every day. So I didn't have to deal with adversity on that my first attempt. And then on the AZT, things kept on going wrong, and it taught me a lot about reimagining your goals on the go and dealing with problems as they arise, and the fact that like water isn't as essential for 30 miles as you think it might be. And yeah, just like a lot of like it helped. The AZT taught me, it was my first time really pushing sleep deprivation at all. On the Long Trail, my phone broke, so I didn't have an alarm to set. So I was sleeping like 6 to 9 hours a night. And the AZT was my first time actually cutting back on sleep ever. So going into the PCT again with that experience meant I was much more familiar with how little sleep I could really get away with, which was probably very useful this time.
Yeah, I definitely think that the sleep deprivation aspect is often overlooked. And to some extent you can probably train it, but I think a lot of it comes down to just like what an individual is capable of dealing with.
Yeah, I find it to be a case of just how much you want it a lot of the time. Sleep will always win, but how far you can push that and how prepared you are just to lie down for 2 minutes on the trail before you get up and get moving again, and like and call that a sleep. Right. I think that's the side of it that you can kind of train a bit more, or you can learn from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe you've kind of touched on this a little bit, but I'm kind of curious, you know, obviously you had done 1,000 miles of the PCT prior as like an FKT type attempt. So was there anything that surprised you this time around, either physically or mentally, about like doing a full, like, you know, 2,600 miles at like an FKT all out sort of engagement level?
Oh, those loads. Southbound felt like cheating because it was just so nice the whole way. The weather was really mild the whole time. You did Northern Washington with fresh legs. Like there wasn't the adversities I was expecting, because if you can get through southbound in the fires before the fires hit, you've got really nice weather the whole way. Whereas going north, it's essentially heat wave. I was always in that area at the hottest time of year for the entire trail. Mm-hmm. And then just the level of fatigue, of like cumulative fatigue that builds up, was really quite shocking. Like, even compared to the Arizona Trail, it was a whole different ball game. And I felt like for the last few hundred miles, my mind was like just removed from my body. I was completely out of it. But also, my body started recovering from injury. I remember Stringbean telling me, like, I was complaining to him in a message about my foot hurting, and he's like, yeah, that's just going to be with you to the end. But about 500 miles later, it had actually started to kind of heal, and I was really amazed that even doing, you know, close to 50 miles a day, the body still managed to heal, given the a long enough opportunity.
That's something I observed too, and I found it very fascinating. I mean, to a certain extent, at a certain point, I knew I was approaching where my body no longer had the capacity to heal certain things. But I was very amazed at, by demanding your body go on, it would. I remember I pulled my hamstring when I was doing my PCT record, and I was like, this could end my hike, and it healed in like a week, you know? And it's just like, because I was just like, we're still going to hike 50s until you stop hurting or till I can't, you know? And it's interesting to hear you talk about how you experienced something similar, because it goes against all conventional wisdom, you know, of rest, you know, when you're injured.
I felt like I'd made smart decisions regarding how to push through injuries, but I think that was just what I was telling myself at the time, whereas in the reality, my body was going to heal either way. So like, I stopped using poles. So I got a foot pain in my right foot and couldn't load my right forefoot, and I couldn't load my left Achilles tendon for about 300 miles. So I was walking with a double limp, but putting poles away forced me to walk more naturally, and not taking ibuprofen stopped me from being able to push through the pain until eventually those things actually just weren't bothering me quite as much. And I managed to be able to bend my foot again, which was, yeah, felt very remarkable at the time.
Yeah, no, I think it is very remarkable. And I think it is something that is interesting and unique. And I'm not sure, I mean, there's very few people that can have this discussion about going at an FKT pace self-supported for this long. You know, I've had the discussions like this with Scott and now you, and I mean, Stringbean wasn't self-supported, but you know, we could have some similar discussions there. So it's just very interesting, because I feel like there are these interesting questions about how the body responds to this kind of demand. And there's not very many people who can like talk about it at like an intimate level, you know? So it is interesting. And so speaking of, you know, which Scott and my record, and I feel like I probably should have like said this right off the bat, but you know, it's so incredible here that you set this time. I mean, you hiked the whole PCT in 55 days. I mean, you essentially took 10 full days off of the previous men's record that Scott set. And so you demolished a 13-year-old record, and you also took 5 days off of my 9-year-old overall record. So I know you didn't meet the time goals you intended initially, but I'm kind of curious about like the mindset of first, why and how you chose the audacious goal you had and what it was for our audience. And then also what the evolution of mindset was throughout. Like, you obviously knew you were going to beat Scott's record, and you were obviously going to beat my record, but were you upset with how things turned out, or were you happy with how things went, like while you were on the trail?
So yes, I wanted to break the overall record. I was telling myself I was going to Stringbean it after his AT hike. Like, that was what I was saying in my head. I was ahead of Tim's pace for 2,000 miles. Like, I got to Oregon before him, and it wasn't until Lyon said that I actually fell off his pace, really. And those last 550 miles, I mean, they were crippling. The last 200 kind of got a bit better, and I sort of managed to adjust my mindset. But having stuck to the very audacious goal I set myself for 6 weeks, like, I woke up the morning of Lion's Head and I said to myself 10 days to go. And then it ended up being like 13 or 14 more. It was really hard to adjust. I very almost quit several times. Like, I thought I had quit for an entire day, and I couldn't really readjust my mindset. I knew I didn't have a third attempt in me, and I came back this year because I knew I hadn't managed to put this goal out my mind. So I had to finish, but I was doing the math on like, what's the least amount of miles per day I can do just to scooch in under 60 days or 60 and a half days, because I just lost essentially all desire to really suffer or struggle once I detoured around and I fell off the overall pace. And yeah, it kind of did and kind of still does feel like a failure, even though it's kind of events that were out of my control. And that is very much just how FKTs go. They aren't really representative of what the individual can do. their representative, what they can do in a certain set of circumstances. In the time, you don't really see it that way. In the time, it's so all-consuming that it just felt like it failed and I couldn't really see it any other way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I've said this, I think other FKTers feel similarly. There is no perfect FKT. Like, there's never that moment where, like, literally everything went perfectly as best as possible. There's always the low or the challenge that you don't expect, and it's about making do with what circumstances you're dealt.
Yeah, I think I've had messages from quite a few of the self-supported FKT folk as well, and they've all shared similar sentiments of disappointment after the fact, because it just, yeah, because it doesn't, as you said, it doesn't go how you wanted. What felt different about this one was the reasons it didn't go as I wanted, because it was a fire closure that I have my opinions about. And I'm still not sure I made the right decision by going around it. It was disaster. Detouring around Lionshead was a disaster in every possible way. And I don't know if I think I should have gone through it or not.
Yeah, I mean, I know that, and no matter what happens, I mean, I remember when I finished my PCT FKT, after I had slept, looked back at it and I could see all of the things. You know, you can always look back and you can see all of the things. And I remember saying to someone, I should have done that in 55 days. Like, just knowing that all of the things, like, I was like, I slept too much. I did laundry, you know, like, you just notice all of, cause you're so close to it and you can just, you know, when you're in the moment, you're making the best decisions you can. But after you're out of it, you can look back and you can just see all of those little things, or sometimes big things, where you could have saved time or been more efficient or made a better choice.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think it's in the nature of the type of person to go after these things. It's also the type of person to be hypercritical of themselves.
Yes, that perfectionism, which is interesting because, like we were just talking about, you know, an FKT can never be perfect. And yet it tends to draw those of us who like that perfectionism aspect. Yeah.
It also wouldn't be as fun if it was perfect every time.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It would lose its appeal. So I would like to know, and I think I probably know what you're going to say based on what we were just talking about, but your hardest section of trail, and why was it your hardest section of trail?
So yeah, Lionshead.
Can you talk a little bit about what Lionshead is, like, just for maybe listeners who don't understand this?
Yeah, so 2 years ago, there was a lightning fire that started in Northern Oregon around Mount Jefferson, and the trail has remained closed for a couple years, where the PCTA have said there is no walkable detour and recommend through hikers hitch around the section. When Tim went for the record last year, he drove around the section doing an out and back to the fire closure boundary, and then on the south side and then the same on the north side to make up roughly equivalent miles. But as I couldn't get into a vehicle the entire attempt, I hoped there would be a trail around the east side. On some of the maps we looked at, there was a trail on the east side. On some of them, there wasn't, so we weren't sure how good of a quality that trail would be. And when I got there, about 2.5 miles into it, it turned into just hell. You know, 1 mile an hour pace was pushing it, and generous of me to say it was that fast. Like, it was waist to chest height, bushwhacking through a burn zone for 7 miles on the south side and then almost 5 miles on the north side of it. There was a bit of kind of fifth class terrain that I had to get up. And like, there were signs of a trail being there. There were way markings on trees, but the trees were all horizontal. They'd all burnt over. Well, 5 of those 7 miles took me 6 hours. And then I came out of it and I had a 32 mile road walk, and I had 1 liter of water on me, and there were no water sources on my map on Gaia. So I think it was 115 degrees that day, according to the woman at Olali Lake. And I got a horrific sunstroke, and I got very ill from that. And I quit halfway through that road walk, and then bushwhacked the second 5 miles and a further 5 hours the next day. And I got to Olali Lakes thinking I'd quit. And I messaged my friend telling her I was done. But there was a 1 mile one mile of trail from the end of the bushwhack to the store at Olali Lake. And I put my headphones back in for that because there was nothing to rip them out whilst I was back on trail. And I checked my phone again at the store and it said I'd done that mile in 19 minutes. And I was like, even though it was on a road, like, I knew if I could still move like that, no matter how much pain I was in or no matter how much, I just didn't want to be there anymore. I had 600 miles to go and I could suffer through it regardless. But yeah, that was by far and away the hardest stretch of trail.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, like, there's literally nothing that could be worse than that. in those last 600 miles. You've already done that.
It tried. It really tried. The next day, I went to bed having just puked, pooped, and peed all over myself. I got just deathly ill. I did an 11-mile day the next day. Like, I set up camp at 11 a.m. because I just died. And everything I ate made me puke or poop it out again. And then I got to Timberline, ate as much as I could, continued evacuating all of it. And then I got stung by a wasp and went into anaphylaxis just north of Cascade Locks. And then I started peeing blood for the last 8 days. So it tried to make it worse.
Nature had a vendetta against you.
There was more that went wrong than that as well. It was like I call it the worst week on trail that anyone's ever had.
Yeah, it sounds terrible. Do you think you were sick from like bad water or food, or do you think it was residual from the sunstroke?
I think it was a sunstroke. It came about like the very next morning. I just had absolutely no energy and just things weren't sitting solid inside of me.
I mean, I didn't have to do the bushwhack from hell, or, you know, I didn't have some of these things that you did, obviously, but I do find it interesting because in Central Oregon, in very similar area, was when like I literally felt like my body was falling apart. I was sick for no reason. And I like had my mental, like, I'm going to quit as well. And then was able to rally basically at Olali Lake. And so I think that it's very interesting. Maybe there's something to be said about the cumulative toll at that 2,000-ish mile mark and being able to push beyond that. I think that that's kind of interesting that we both had somewhat similar experiences in that same region.
I don't think you can go through something like this without quitting at some point.
Right. It's just true.
That it's so long and your body is going to be broken down so much. Like, you can't. I don't know about Joe on the AT, but I feel like it's very difficult to be that mentally focused without a brief wobble for 45 to 55 days or 60 days.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious, you know, you said, you know, you were halfway through that road walk through this bushwhack around and you quit. So what does quitting mean? Do you just mean in your head you quit, or did you like stop and set up camp? Like, describe what you mean by when you say you quit.
I set up camp 7:30, 8 p.m. that day, several hours earlier than usual. I quit a few hours before that, really. I was like, you know, moving 1 mile an hour on an undulating dirt road. I had three naps between saying I'd quit and actually setting up camp. It was just, my head wasn't in it anymore. I messaged some people saying, like, I'm done, it's over. And I was looking for how I get out of here. Like, I didn't see a car for the duration of that road walk. It's all in the middle of nowhere, but I was fully prepared to hitch. Like, if a car came by, I would have hitched with it. Like, yeah, my head just...
So it's like, in a way, you owe your success to the fact that there was no one driving down that road while you were on it.
So there was one car, but I don't like to tell that story.
Okay.
He was drunk and stopped it, skidded the car in front of me, asked me what I was doing, and then starts leaning on his gun on the hood as I respond. And yeah, even in that state, I wasn't getting into a car with a drunk man who was pointing a gun at me.
Yeah, that's a good call. So kind of moving away from kind of that, like the low points here, I'm kind of curious about what your training strategy for something like this was like. You know, what did you do prior to getting on the PCT to train specifically for this attempt?
So I didn't train a lot in the year prior. I just kind of ran for fun. I was living in the Scottish Highlands and I had a rough year last year and decided, like, I just don't want to train anymore. So I just ran when I wanted to run, which happened to be quite frequently, but because I lived in the mountains, you know, I think you were at the place I'd been living the day I finished. Well, at least you were up Ben Nevis, which I was living at the foot of. Like, all of that, all of the Scottish Highlands were essentially my playground. So every time I went running, it involved a 3,000-foot, 2-mile climb. So thankfully, like, not training still meant doing a lot of vert and staying in reasonably good shape. And then I did a big circumnavigation of Death Valley at the end of April, start of May with John Z. That was my first time camping since the Arizona Trail, you know, 2 and a bit years prior. And that was kind of the most training I did. And then once I realized I was still in shape from that, I did a couple of 50-mile days on the PCT just to check my body was still up for it. But that, like, in 2019, there was a very structured training plan. I think for about 5 months, I did 25 hours of training a week, having just read Uphill Athlete and all of their stuff, and like going very deep down the training rabbit hole. This time it was very, very unfocused, you know, no structured training sessions, the odd bit of strength work here and there, and just counting on like 18,000 miles of hiking experience.
Yeah, there's definitely something to be said, I think, about, especially on FKT this long, of going into it healthy and rested, more important than going into it for possibly overtrained or on the verge of injury. And I also think there's something to be said for training in a way that feeds your soul, not just meets your splits. You know, I think you probably kind of understand what I mean by that. And I can't really think of a better place to like just run for fun than there at Fort William, you know?
Yeah, it was a good place to be living.
Yeah.
I mean, a few trails would have been nice here and there. Yeah, I think every hill I could get up involved a VK. It was all less than 3 miles with more than 3,000 foot of climbing if I wanted to go up a hill. So occasionally doing something flatter would have been nice, but the road I lived on didn't have flat options. So
yeah, I mean, the flattest thing around there, I think, is the West Highland Way, and you still are going way up if you're going out of there. Yeah, I remember I camped before I did Ben Nevis there, and I don't know, right before, you know, the evening, a herd of runners went right by me. I was like, I could hear all these voices, and I was like, what is going on? I like look at my tent, and there's just all these people running by, and I was just like, okay, I guess there's a lot of running in these parts, you know. Yeah,
especially over summer. Yeah, because I lived at the youth hostel where the Ramsey Round starts, and over summer last year there were about 70 successful Ramsey Rounds and probably 150 attempts. So it seemed like every night there were people leaving to run up the Ben or coming down from the Ben to touch the side and collapse. Yeah, there's a lot of it.
Did you do a Ramsey Round while you were there? Or
I did a Tranter's. I did a Ramsey in 2019 when I was training for this. I did a Winter Bob, and then I did a solo Ramsey, and then I trained for 3 weeks. When I say trained, I did three weeks of like focused hill work before trying a solo Winter Ramsey Round a couple of weeks after John Kelly tried it. But it was in full winter conditions, and when I was crossing the Glen Nevis River, I fell in. It was just raging, and I couldn't cross it. And then when I got soaked, I was like, I didn't want to then go up the hills east of Loch Eil, so I just ran back home.
Wow, yeah, I backpacked the Tranter basically this summer, and I cannot even fathom being up there in the winter, like when there's ice, like coming off of the back of Ben Nevis in ice. And doing that transition slope to get over from to the Great Quarries. Like, I can't even fathom doing these things if there's snow or ice. Oh my God. Like,
yeah. So I did the Great Quarries a week prior to my attempt, and the descent off Carnmore Jerrig up Annock Beg and Annock Moor was like actually terrifying. Because I had running shoes on. Even with crampons, you don't have a stiff enough platform to front point. And then I had to like knock a cornice down. So I tied myself to a rock and just knocked it down with my ice axe. To be like, well, at least that won't be there when I attempt it for real. And it was intense. It felt scary. It's way out of my comfort zone.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done some winter stuff, but like in general, I just stay out of the mountains in the winter for those reasons. I don't do well in the cold anyway, so that's the limitation for me. But yeah, I mean,
I don't either. Usually I have quite severe Raynaud's disease. Yeah, you know it then. So I usually travel with about 5 packs of hand warmers in the winter and far too many layers.
Like, people are always looking at my gear list and like, why do you have 4 pairs of gloves? I was like, because if one gets wet, I need a dry one.
Yeah.
This probably doesn't apply to you, but it applies to me. Well, I'm sure we could talk for a long time about Scotland, but that would probably bore everybody who hasn't been there. So tell me a little bit about like the permitting process for the PCT. Like, I think I heard that they no longer issue permits for people who start after June 1st. Like, did you have to like permit as you went along, or were you able to get like the full like PCTA permit? I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah. So I had a PCTA permit. It just didn't start the day I started.
I got one
for the last day of May, but when they told me they stopped issuing ones for June, realistically, it's not possible to self-permit on an FKT anymore because you have to go into Lone Pine, to Inyo National Forest Ranger Station to get the Kennedy Meadows to Sonora Pass permit, and then you'd have to get a car. You'd have to get in a car to go there to get that. So yeah, I just started on a different day to my permit.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I have no idea, but it's just very strange to me that they don't issue. I mean, you used to be able to get a permit. I'm old. I've done the PCT from way back when. And you used to be able to get a permit to start any day you wanted to. So I was really surprised. I think it was Witt who told me that they know.
So this is the first, this is the first year of that. So I had.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I remember he asked me about it and I was like, I don't know. I think you can get a permit.
So I had one for a northbound attempt in 19, but I hadn't recovered from the long trail in time. And I know Tim had a northbound permit as well. So this was the first year you couldn't get one in June anymore. But there were also a lot of June starters, which really surprised me. But yeah, I passed about 14 people who started in June, all hiking together in around Big Bear. So I assume a lot of people are doing the same thing I did, because self-permitting seems... I don't think many people are self-permitting anymore.
Right. Well, I mean, it's a huge hassle. I mean, whether you're attempting an FKT or not, it's a huge hassle. I mean, that's one of the benefits of being able to get the PCTA permit.
It's not as bad as people think. Because the only section before Kendi Meadows, you only need permits to camp in the areas. So if you can hike through them, it's fine. And then if you go to the Inyo Ranger Station, you can get your Sierra permit. And then the PCTA permit is non-quota from Sonora Pass to the end. So you can just get one of those to cover the rest of it. So it's only really that one permit you need, but it's not realistic to get that on an FKT attempt.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious to shift gears a little bit here. Anyway, I've talked a lot about the hike itself and all of that, but I kind of want to know what your re-entry process has been like, if you're comfortable talking about it.
Awful. I'm still trying to convince myself 3 months later it's just post-hike depression. I've had a really hard time readjusting. Yeah, it's been very difficult to get my feelings on all of this together. It still does feel like a failure to some extent. I'm trying to view it more positively, but generally it's quite challenging, especially when everyone is so positive about it to you. Everyone always says, it's always about congratulations. It's amazing. You've done such an incredible thing. But when you feel yourself like that's like you've not done enough or it wasn't a success, then there's just that constant contrast between what people are telling you and how you actually feel. And it can be difficult to handle or to deal with. I tried the Colorado Trail FKT about a month later. I think it was 3 weeks after I got back from Hearts Pass I started, because I was so fed up of thinking about the PCT, and that went disastrously, as you might expect. But yeah, the whole post-hike thing has not been good for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, the similarity in our trajectories is fascinating to me. You know, it's like I struggled a lot. That juxtaposition between how I felt and what external feedback I was getting was really hard for me as well. I didn't necessarily struggle with the failure feeling, like kind of like where you feel that, but I definitely went wholesale into imposter syndrome, where I just felt like it was a fluke. Like there was no way I could have possibly done it. I mean, that was my first FKT, you know, and I just like had, you know, and it was just like constantly, like almost like the more people congratulated me, the more I felt like negative and like a fake, and began to like, you know, and obviously I went out and I tried to solve it by doing the JMT FKT and it went terribly. So it's similar to your Colorado Trail. And eventually just got to a point where I was like, I couldn't even talk about the PCT. Yeah. So that's very interesting to hear you kind of echo some similar issues with processing and reentry.
I mean, I declined after the interview. I did my outside interview and then everything after that, about 2 months, I just didn't do it because I didn't want to talk about it at all. But I had a lot of imposter syndrome on the hike itself. I felt, you know, having done the AZT as fast as I did and having a time on the AZT, it wasn't so much against feeling an imposter compared to yourself as Stringbean and Joey Camps and Carl Sabe, who are these people who's, you know, I was that nerdy kid on White Blaze following along with all these FKTs when I was 18, because that was my introduction to this, and I had Joey Camp's splits on the PCT, and every day I'd see myself getting a bit further ahead than him, and knowing I was ahead of Stringbean's time for so long as well, it felt like it was imposter syndrome at its finest. Like I had no rational explanation for why I was able to do it, because by all accounts, these people who I think are better than me, I was keeping up with or ahead of.
Yeah, it's definitely the mental side of FKTs is highly underrated, I believe, and the mental aspect of what happens after you set the FKT as well. So maybe we can wrap this up with what was your biggest takeaway from this experience?
It was, I think, that big audacious goals don't solve your problems. A lot of people have the mentality that through hiking can like solve their problems. And I think after a couple of hikes, you generally realize it's not going to, except I had those couple of hikes, realized it wouldn't, and then did FKTs. I was like, well, maybe these will solve them. Maybe if I make it harder, that'll fix everything. And it doesn't. But I was surprised how much fun I actually had doing it. I might not be able to find that now, but I can remember at the time I really did enjoy it. A lot of it, at least, because it's such a ridiculous thing. Like, there's no real fame or glory in it, but it was so all-encompassing during it. And I never questioned, like, waking up and not being able to walk and why am I continuing? Because I was still, despite everything, for the most part, I was still really enjoying it. So it was, I think the other takeaway was that I actually do really enjoy this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's something really beautiful about having a period in your life where you're completely immersed and focused and there are no questions. Your goal is clear every day of your life. Well, thank you so much for making time to come on here and share with us. And we really appreciated the opportunity to be able to chat with you.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thank you.
Thanks again, Josh, for coming on the show. You can check out his FKTs on the website, fastestknowntime.com, and follow him on Instagram, _Joshua Perry. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, this is Heather on the FKT Podcast.